You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
This is not James Edwards, of course. This is Winston Smith. I'd like to thank Ken Gibbon for an interesting hour of conversation, and I trust that you enjoyed it. My next guest is someone who kind of made a big splash. I'm the first one of the staff to interview him, and the comments were amazing. People were saying they'd never heard a white minister talk that way. I'm just going to introduce him. His name is Reverend Brett McAtee. I've known him for years. He's a good friend, and he's a solid Christian, and he's just a fine individual. I'm very pleased to know him, and I'd like for you to know him too. So, Brett, welcome to Political Cesspool.
Thank you, Wes Winston.
How many times have you been on the program now?
I believe this is the third time.
Okay. Well, as I said, you quickly became a fan favorite, and I hope we continue that tonight. I'm sure we will. So let's just get right to it.
Well, I'm glad for your kindness, and I'm glad to have you and James contact me. It's a privilege, really.
Excellent. All right. Let's just jump right into our talk tonight. We wanted to talk about the decline and fall of the West. Western civilization is in a very bad way. Everywhere we look, we see Western countries being taken over by hordes of people who are not from those countries. They don't care about the institutions of their host countries. They don't care about the traditions of their host countries. All they care about is being what they were in their own, I won't use the word that President Trump used, but they're interested in being exactly what they were in their own countries. And you cannot build a first world civilization on third world population. So, Reverend Brett, there are several things that we want to talk about that have brought about this decline. And I'm just going to throw this out there. The media has fueled the decline, education has fueled the decline, jurisprudence has fueled the decline, and most distressingly, the church has fueled the decline. A man named Chris Hedges said this: "We now live in a nation where doctors destroy health, lawyers destroy justice, universities destroy knowledge, governments destroy freedom, the press destroys information, religion destroys morals, and our banks destroy the economy." What do you think?
Yeah, how could I disagree? That's exactly accurate. I came across in my reading something that Whitaker Chambers wrote to William F. Buckley in 1961. And Chambers said even in 1961, basically said the West is already dead and there's no bringing it back. Now, whether that's true or not, by God's grace, we hope it's not true. But even in 1961, somebody as prolific in their writing as Whitaker Chambers saw what was going on. So, yes, the West is in decline. The question of whether it's reversible is at sovereignty, but it's definitely the case that it's a different world than the one that you or I even grew up in. And the rapid change of our culture in light of this decline is just breathtaking. It's like living in Alice's Wonderland. If you want to talk about how we got to this point because of the government, as well as those other institutions you've talked about, there's all kinds of things that might be said on that score.
All right. Well, what are your thoughts? How has education contributed to the fall of the West?
Sure. Well, educationally, of course, the government has seized that. And with Jimmy Carter, of course, created the Department of Education. But even before then, the government was controlling what was going on in education, and one of the ways that we saw that was the consolidation of school districts so that you had the elimination of these smaller schools in favor of larger districts and larger schools. But if you want to fast forward from that point, educationally, we've been in a bad way since Horace Mann came up with the idea of having mass education. But in our time, in our lifetimes at least, of course, there's the whole reality of the Common Core. This Common Core, which has been constructed from Washington and passed down then to the school district, has the ultimate goal, the instupidification, the dumbing down of our children. The Common Core is not historically based, it's completely sociologically based, and everything about it smacks of confusing the child instead of helping the child. One example of that is the whole program is Goals 2000 and otherwise known as No Child Left Behind. This again was Washington, D.C., legislating from Washington for all the states. And what they didn't tell you in the whole program of No Child Gets Left Behind is that no child gets ahead. So it's that same old idea of socialism, is everything is reduced to the lowest common denominator. Educationally speaking, all of our children became equally stupid under the No Child Left Behind and the Common Core concept. Also, what the schools do now from K through 12 and in the university as well, they do what they call a disenchantment of the world. That is the idea that they strip the student of any kind of the idea of the religious, any kind of the idea of the mysterious, the transcendent. And instead what they plug in is the idea of science, so-called, or enlightenment thinking. And so the student has basically taught there is no transcendent reference point for truth. Truth is eclipsed. We're no longer worried about truth. We're worried about meaning. And meaning can be person variable. And so truth is now out the window, along with transcendence, along with religion, along with God. And, of course, we've created monsters by this kind of educational program. And then the university only steps on the accelerator to make it even worse. And that's not even talking about, we haven't even gotten into the idea of what happens when you create a Lord of the Flies atmosphere in the classroom by putting 20, 13, 14, 15-year-olds together, or however many you want to put together. So this is educationally speaking, the decline of the West has certainly been aided and abetted by what we call education. Shouldn't be called education, but what we call education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't take a very hard look to see that the state of education in this country is pathetic. Every week we see new stories of outrages on campuses when blacks want their own safe spaces so that they can talk about what they want to talk about without fear of offending white sensibilities. You know, I read stories like that and I think, you know, they already say some pretty awful things about us in public without safe spaces. I just wonder what they're going to say about us when we can't listen to them.
Well, look, you know, it was in the 1960s when they integrated the universities.
Hold
and now...
on, hold on, Reverend Brett. Got to go to a break.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
James is not here because he's taking a break. He needs to take some time off to spend with his wife and kids. After a successful 15th anniversary show, I think it was last week. But anyhow, 15 years of the political cesspool. I can't believe it's gone by that fast. It's been a great ride. I've enjoyed it all. We're here tonight with Reverend Brett McAtee, a political cesspool fan favorite. And we were talking about the decline of the West. Reverend Brett, before we go any further, I'd like you to tell people where they can see some more of your thoughts or more of your work. I believe you have a website called Iron Inc.
Right. If people want to access more of my writing, they can go to. Okay, I'm sorry. If people want to access my writing, they can go to ironinc.org, and there they can and see all kinds of this kind of information in different articles and essays and whatnot.
So that's ironinc.com, right?
Ironinc.org, O-R-G.
Oh, okay, like politicalsimple.org. Got it.
Yep.
Well, folks, there you have it. You just can't get enough of Reverend Brett. Go to ironinc.org. Before I went to the break, we were talking about the university's contribution to the fall of the West, and I had made the point of blacks wanting safe spaces on campus so they could talk unfettered in a way that they aren't able to do with us honkies around. And you were starting a point, but you didn't get too far into it. Can you take that up again?
Yeah, I just said that universities became integrated in the, I think it was the early 1960s. And now it seems that many of the ethnic communities don't like being with whites. And I have no problem if they want to start their own universities and their own educational matrix systems, of course, you know, with their own funds and money. I think that's perfectly acceptable, and indeed, maybe it should be saluted as long as that standard is held for other ethnicities, other races as well, so then white people can have their own universities or schools, if that's what they want. If somebody wants to go to something that's integrated, multicultural, then they can do that too. But the fact that they want their own spaces, you know, just suggests to me that they want to segregate again, which, again, I have no problem with.
Well, it does seem like a lot of non-white groups certainly do want their own spaces. They want their form of segregation. It's okay when they propose segregation, but when white people propose segregation, then it becomes very bad. And you know, a couple times a year, I see stories about how even high schools are resegregating, and you see it in the lunchroom. And, you know, white kids want to eat with white kids, black kids want to eat with black kids. Nothing wrong with that. It keeps the peace. Segregation works. It works for everybody.
Right. And that's not uncommon. I mean, that's never been uncommon. That's not something that's new. It's the same way almost any institution that you want to think of. It's true, for example, in prisons as well. That's perhaps not the ideal example, but in prison populations, segregate. Educational institutions tend to move in that direction. It may not be universal, but it's still there's still a tendency to that end. And as someone has once said, trying to be witty, they say the most segregated hour in America is 11 o'clock on Sundays during church. And again, there's nothing wrong with that because people like being with people who are like them. That's not to say that other people are bad who aren't with them. It's just to say that's a common tendency. There's nothing evil about it.
And yet somehow even that falls in the lap of white people. It's like they think we are the ones who want that segregation. And we do. I want church segregation, but so do they. Their hypocrisy is astounding here. It's okay for them to segregate from us, but for us to segregate from them, they take that as an insult. And it's not an insult. It's, as you said, we just want to be around our own kind. And there is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's certainly a double standard that's going down all over the place. So, for example, people whine and moan about white privilege when, in point of fact, the case can easily be made that what's going on is black privilege. But nobody can talk about that because that would be automatically wicked or evil. Or take quoting James Cone or Elijah Muhammad or Louis Farrakhan, some of the things they said about white people and how evil they are. You know, that's acceptable, but if it comes from the other direction, you know, that's worth the fires of hell. So there's definitely a double standard, and we live in an age where white people just have to swallow it seems anyway.
Earlier I said that the most distressing thing about the decline of the West is that the modern church has contributed to it, and that saddens me greatly. It was the church that made Europe great. It was churches that made America great. There are books out about political sermons that were preached in the pre-revolutionary war era and even during the colonial era. So the churches back then were mightily involved in politics. But now that the churches have become, what is the scripture that says, be not conformed into the world?
Right, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove that which is acceptable and perfect, or mature.
Now we live in a time where the church has been successfully transformed into darkness. They've transformed minds into darkness, and they have fully embraced the world.
Yeah, the church, of course, most of the people that are in pulpits came through the educational system in one degree or another. And even the seminaries anymore have been compromised by going through the educational system. And we can't get over the reality that what the educational system has pushed is, again, this idea that what our fathers believed is evil. So patriarchy is evil. Gender roles are evil. The idea of distinctions, proper distinctions that are once upon a time made. So, for example, women no longer being ministers or elders. Those kind of things now are seen as evil in the church. And the church is just a pale reflection of the broader educational system. It still really is a support network for the modern state, which wants to get rid of biblical Christianity. So the only people that, that the modern church will rail against, and this is even the white hat denominations, the only people they'll rail against are those who are Christians like their fathers and their grandfathers and their great-grandfathers before them.
They are essentially dishonoring their fathers and mothers.
Yes, yes. The church has that's, I know, I never thought about that. That's the way to put it. The church has become one walking violation of the Fifth Commandment.
Of course, the attendant promise with that commandment is, you know, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. We're losing the land that the Lord gave us because we are dishonoring our mothers and fathers.
Yeah, and if you think, you know, the way it's supposed to be, though, is that Christians inherit the earth, and we're being disinvested of not only our land, but the whole earth, because we're not being obedient and loyal children to biblical Christianity. Everything is inverted. Everything's on its head. It's just, sometimes it's breathtaking. I have to get away in a corner, and okay, we got a break. Yeah.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump is promising to release a transcript, possibly on Tuesday, of another call with Ukraine's President Zelensky.
Read the transcript. You'll see the call. Now I'll give you a second transcript because I actually had two calls with the president of Ukraine. So you'll read the second call, and you'll tell me if you think there's anything wrong with it.
What was discussed during a call between the leaders in July prompted the impeachment inquiry. The president says the U.S. will always get tariffs, but the trade talks with China are coming along, and he's open to making a deal, but only if it's the right deal for America.
Just so you understand, China forever never paid us 10 cents. Now we have literally, we will soon have literally hundreds of billions of dollars coming in from China. We never got anything from China.
This is USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Allen Root, relentless conservative warrior, middle-class warrior, and always Trump warrior. I have a message for my fellow patriots across America. President Trump is making America great again. He's the only president in my lifetime who is keeping his promises, and his biggest promise is to build that wall. President Trump can only do it with our help. If Congress won't fund Trump's wall, we will. President Trump is one man against the world, and what globalists and socialists around the world want is clear, open borders. It's time to take a stand. We either build the wall, or it's the end of the greatest nation in world history ever blessed by God. That's why I founded the Root for the Wall PAC. 63 million Trump voters together will raise the money President Trump needs for the wall. Anyone who donates $100 or more will get a beautiful commemorative wall brick. Display it proudly. Call 844-ROOT-WALL. That's toll-free, 844-ROOT-WALL, or go to rootwall.com. We will build this wall together. Call 844-ROOT-WALL or go to rootwall.com. Root for the Wall PAC. Pay for it. Responsible for the content of this message. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. rootwall.com.
There's a big celebration happening in Germany. It was 30 years ago that the Berlin Wall was torn down. John Clemens reports.
The genesis for the destruction of the Berlin Wall that divided the West from the East from 1961 to 1989 began 2 years earlier when President Ronald Reagan stood before the Brandenburg Gate and spoke directly to the leader of the Soviet Union.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I'm John Clemens.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
I'm Lindsey Smith, and I'm talking with Reverend Brett McAtee, and we've been discussing the decline and fall of the West. We dealt with the role that education, or should we say poor education, has contributed to this fall. And now we're talking about how the modern church has contributed to the fall of the West. Reverend Brett, will you continue your thought, please?
Sure. Teeing this up, though, when it comes to education, we have to keep in mind that this is not accidental. This is deliberate. This is being done to us by those who are planning what's absolutely happening. Now, in the church, again, is just following in the wake. As we said, it's basically taking the faith and it's reinterpreting it in a cultural Marxist direction so that, as I was saying earlier, the family is no longer seen as the central unit. It's no longer understood that patriarchy is the absolute good. For example, there was a book recently written by a young lady who's supposedly conservative, who's going on and saying, well, I'm not interested in gender roles from the 1950s. I want to know what the Bible says. Well, never mind that anytime, not only in the 1950s, but 2,000 years prior to that, those gender roles were something that were understood as coming from Scripture. But now all of a sudden we have to be told by a young lady who is supposedly, again, is conservative, that that's all hogwash. We need to completely rethink our gender roles. And all of this is being pumped and primed the church that I'm exposed to is the Reformed Church. So other churches are doing it as well, I know, but the Reformed Church is right in there playing along with the cultural Marx game plan and advancing the agenda of the Frankfurt School. It's lunacy.
Yeah, the long march through the institutions has been very effective, and they've still got a lot more tricks up their sleeve. But the church's complicity, the church visible's complicity in the destruction of our society is something that galls me to no end.
You have to understand again, it's the leaders. Now, I'm not sure the rank and file listens much to the leaders, but in as much as they do, the leaders are the ones that are taking us in this direction. But we have to be encouraged as we read our scriptures. We have to remember Elijah felt like he was all hopeless. There's nobody left but me, Elijah said, and God reminded Elijah, "No, not so fast. There's 7,000, the perfect full number who have not bowed the knee to Baal." And we're in our isolated pockets around the states, and even I talked to some people around the globe. Even we're in isolated pockets, and we think there's nobody else. But we need to understand that even if there was nobody else, that's not true. But even if there wasn't, God remains sovereign. Everything that He's doing is to the end of bringing reformation and renewal, even though it's almost impossible for us.
And what the Reformed churches are doing, and I attend the Reformed church as well. But what the Reformed churches are doing is ghastly. This past year, I think it was, the Presbyterian Church in America had their what was their big gay acceptance conference they had?
Yeah, that was their General Assembly. A chap named Greg Johnson, who insists that he's I don't know what word he would use. Would he use the word queer? Would he use the word homosexual? I don't know what word he would use, but he'd say that he's definitely that way, but he's celibate. And so he's celibate, but he's still queer, according to him. And he wants the denomination to accept that. So instead of saying, this got some real problems, they put a study committee together. And already based on the study committee, you can probably guess what the study committee is going to come back and say. And then on top of that, they had all kinds of a petition. They had a petition signed by all kinds of ruling elders, teaching elders, against a statement that was that was brought to the floor that was contrary to what the celibate queer wanted, and all these people signed this document against the person who brought the overture because supposedly used harsh language, and it didn't. I mean, people would have to go back and look at the overture, but this guy was, I don't remember the pastor's name, but he was mild-mannered as possible, but there were legions of people that signed this document wanting him to be censured because of the rough language that he used in talking about this situation. And so we're the ones that are being put on the defensive when we should really be the ones that are on the offensive. Actually, it's gotten to the point now where throughout the Reformed denomination, there's going to have to be people asking hard questions about staying in Reformed denominations. That's how bad it's gotten.
I can't remember who it was who said this, but the quote, I remember, said something like this. The modern world demands that we approve what it should not even dare ask us to tolerate. And we're getting that from the pulpits and from the general assemblies and from the Church Visible's leadership. They're demanding that Christians approve of things that they should not even dare ask us to tolerate.
Yeah. What's the chap? The guy's last name is Moore with the Southern Baptist Convention. There's so many Moores out there, I get them mixed up. Russell Moore. He wrote recently a column for the New York Times titled "What the Church Can Learn from Sesame Street." I mean, even the title of the article should make you realize that somebody's jumped the shark here. And yet, it was this whole thing about multiculturalism and diversity is our strength, and blah blah blah. Again, right out of the playbook of the Frankfurt School. It could have been written by Theodore Adorno. It could have been written by Max Horkheimer. It could have been written by any number of the enemies of the church. And here it is from one of the leadership of the church.
Okay, let's move on to another aspect of what is contributing to the decline and the ruin of Western civilization, the media. This is a big one, and this is the one that galls more people than the church's involvement. And you know, to both my point there, I'm going to quote Robert Heinlein, a great author. Here's what he wrote. There seems to have been an actual decline in rational thinking. The United States had become a place where entertainers and professional athletes were mistaken for people of importance. They were idolized and treated as leaders. Their opinions were sought on everything, and they took themselves just as seriously. After all, if an athlete is paid $1 million or more dollars a year, he knows he's important, so his opinions of foreign affairs and domestic policies must be important, too, even though he proves himself to be ignorant and subliterate every time he opens his mouth. Now, the media is responsible for building up these people into intellectual powerhouses and paragons of virtue. Even LeBron James has jumped into politics and geopolitics, and you know his claim to fame is he throws an air-inflated bladder through a hoop. You can teach a seal at the zoo to do that.
Right. I see these guys interviewed, and I think, who cares? But again, someone must care, else they wouldn't interview. And we have to realize that first of all, the media has an agenda. Edith Efron, as far back as 1968 in her book, The News Twisters, demonstrated that the media comes to all of its issues with a complete and set bias. And she chronicled that, numbered that. But it's even become even more so since she wrote that book in 1968. I have another book called Truth is the First Casualty of War. And we have to realize that we're in a war right now, and the media is not on the side of biblical Christianity, and it will twist everything that comes down the pike. I mean, for goodness sake, ABC just recently put a photo of a gun rally and gun firing on a gun range and said that that was what was going on in Syria. It's just ridiculous what the media will do in order to establish position. So when we come to the media, we have to understand, before we even pick up anything and read it, we have to understand who it's coming from. We have to understand their worldview. We have to understand their presuppositions or dispositions, and we can already probably write the article for them before they do if we know who they are and where they're coming from. The idea that there's no bias in media, that there's such a thing as objective reporting, should be laughed at whenever it's mentioned. So we shouldn't even look at the major media outlets, CBS, NBC, ABC, the news networks, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, Wall Street Journal. We shouldn't even pay attention. We should ignore them except to find out what the enemy's thinking. Then we have to realize the media is...
Hang on.
We're on a break.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Welcome back to Get On the Show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm Winston Smith, sitting in for James Edwards, who's taking a break, a well-deserved break. And James, enjoy your evening, enjoy your week. Everybody's looking forward to you getting back next week. I'm talking with Reverend Brett McAtee. We're going over some of the causes of the decline and fall of the West. We've covered education. We've covered the media. No, we've covered education and we've covered the church. Now we're talking about the media. Reverend Brett, this is the last segment, so finish your point about the media, and I want to ask you the final question.
Sure. I guess my last point in the media, from what I've already said, is that we have to realize that there are six companies who own 90% of the information you're getting, and these six companies are basically holding hands. They create a kind of consensus or the parameters that they tell you that you're allowed to think in, within. So you have GE, the News Corp, Disney, Viacom, Time Warner, CBS. They own 90% of the information you're getting. So you have to make a determined effort to read outside of those sources. Go to places like ironinc.org, go to tribaltheocrat.com. There are many sources out there that will give you views that are not part of the created consensus that what we have in the media right now. And if you're going to be informed, you have to find a way to read outside the consensus that's being created by all this consolidation.
So that list of outlets, I would also recommend Western Voices World News. It's one of my favorites. Again, that's Western Voices World News.
Yeah, another one is The Epic Times. I find pretty good. TheEpicTimes.com.
Yeah, I see their paper all over Washington, D.C. It's a good read.
Yeah, at least it gives you a different angle.
That's true. Now, we spent a lot of time tonight dooming and glooming. Let's try to put a little cheer into this. What can be done? How can you know, if there's going to be a solution,
foremost,
from government, it's not going to come from education institutions. It's not going to come from the churches. It's going to have to come from ordinary people.
Right. What can be done is that, first of all, we need to make ourselves as much as we possibly can aware of the kind of things that we've talked about tonight. We don't doom and gloom in order just to get our jollies off of it. We doom and gloom in order for people to see that there has to be someplace else that they can go in order to get away from this information. And we've given some of those other outlets. Another thing that we need to do is we need to keep our children. If we keep losing our children, and the whole idea of covenant theology and the Reformed understanding is that the faith is passed on from generation. Children, whether we send them to government schools, whether we give them over to the media, whether we send them to church youth group, however it's happening, we're losing our children. So if we want to turn this all this around, we've got to keep our children. Another thing we've got to do is we've got to pull out of these churches that we've described. If you're attending a church that is giving you this kind of bilge that we talked about tonight, you need to leave. Even if it means that you worship out of your home in a small house church setting, the only thing that the church understands is the sound of the clicking of the pocketbook and not getting any more money. And so, in order to turn this around, we've got to get out of our church, and we also have to start supporting the government. In other words, quit voting for tax increases on your local bond issues. Do anything you can to starve any government, local, state, or federal, of funds. They have all the funds that they need, and the more funds you give them, the more they're going to continue to be the problem. Turning things around means finding loyalty within as many like-minded groups as we possibly can, and encouraging one another with scripture. Another thing that we could do is start understanding how biblical Christianity is something that's not just this thing about getting your soul saved, but is this idea of as being applicable to all of life, so that as a minister, I can talk about these different things that we talked about tonight because biblical Christianity applies or has something to say to each of these areas. And then lastly, I would think that something that we desperately need to do to turn this around is that we need to return to God's word, to the law, to know what's right or wrong, to answer the question, how shall we then live? We have to look to God's word, and not only the moral law, but how that moral law is explicated in the civil law or what's called the case law. We have to understand how it is that we can take those principles and apply them to our 2019 type of setting. And we need to do this in such a way that we don't isolate ourselves completely, but yet we don't integrate so much that we lose our identity as who we are. Easier said than done.
Okay, I would love to comment on all that, but as you were talking, I got a message from Stephanie, the transcriptionist. She said she couldn't keep up with you, so I'm scared. You get rather involved in your thoughts, don't you?
I'm sorry, you broke up a bit.
While you were talking, I got a message from Stephanie, the nice lady who transcribes what people are saying, so I can read it.
Oh.
And she said she couldn't keep up with you. You get rather involved with the talk, don't you?
Yeah, that's a problem I have. I can talk.
It's not a problem here. We adapt. So I'm going to say some things, and I don't know if you covered them in your talk there, but I think one of the most important things that we can do, the most important difference we can make, is to get on our knees and pray. Ask God to help us. Ask God to forgive us. Ask God to give us godly leaders. We don't pray enough. I think it was Matthew Henry. Yeah, it was Matthew Henry in his book on prayer. He's asked a very simple question. Are we not Christians? Are we not Christians? And this was in his book on prayer. So his point was that if you're a Christian, you pray. And somebody else once said that a prayerless life is a Christless life. So I think a return to vigorous, regular prayer would do a lot for us. It would certainly change our hearts and minds. And that's what we need. We need changed hearts and minds among those who call themselves by the name of God. We need Christians to have changed hearts and minds. And the scripture says, if my people but humble themselves and get on their knees, humble themselves and pray, you know, he'll bless us. So I think prayer is a big key to reversing the decline.
Right. Prayer communicates the idea that we don't believe that we're on our own. You know, and if we are Christian people, then we should be bringing these things before the Lord in prayer. And not only in our private prayer, but also in our corporate prayer as we gather together as God's people on the Lord's Day each week. That should be part of the pastoral long prayer, these kind of issues that we've been talking about. We're literally shut up to God. There's no place else but to turn to Him. And so prayer has got to be part of that equation. And then lifting up from prayer and going out and seeking to stand. And after we've done all that we can do to stand, stand. So, yeah, we have to understand we're a remnant and that we're going to be opposed, but that's okay.
I would like to recommend that people read Matthew Henry's book on prayer. It's you know, if you've ever read Matthew Henry's commentary on the Bible, you know what his language is like. But this is actually a much easier read, and you should read it.
Yeah, actually, my wife and I have worked through that together in the past.
Yeah, work. That's the key when you're reading that kind of language. And my degree is in English, so I enjoy that kind of language. But sometimes it is a little bit challenging. I remember Spurgeon had said that a woman had asked him how long he prays every day, and he said, "Oh, I never pray more than 5 minutes." And the woman was shocked, and he got the effect he wanted. And then he said, "But I never go 5 minutes without praying."
Right. Prayer is not only that which we do in our prayer closets. It's what we do as we're out and we're engaged in the public. For example, when I come up to difficult situations, when I'm having a counseling session or I'm conversing with somebody, I'll almost always pray for wisdom at that point, because I, you know, left to myself, I don't know how to address a lot of things that come across my path. And so I, you know, while I'm in the midst of the conversation, I'm praying in between my ears, asking for wisdom and help. So prayer is something that can be done 24/7 and probably should be.
I remember reading of a Christian who was involved in a debate, you know, on a stage with podiums and everything. And people noticed that he was writing furiously, and he was writing a lot. And when the debate was over, some people went up to see what he had been writing, and it was the same thing over and over again. More light, Lord. More light, Lord. More light, Lord.
that's a good thing to pray. And face it, none of us have the capacity within ourselves to deal with these issues. They're beyond us. And so we have to repair in our prayer closets to ask God for wisdom on these things, and also to know how to lean into life, and also prayer for opportunities to leverage the crown rights of Jesus Christ.
I think it was Spurgeon who said something like, "The best seminary is not a building, but a closet."
Yeah. Yep.
All right. We're coming to the end of it, but coming to the end of this program, Reverend Brett, thanks very much for coming on. It's always a pleasure. I hope we have you on many more times, and I hope I'm involved in it.
Yeah, thank you very much, and Godspeed.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Stephanie, thank you very much. I guess you did get fast there,
another
but
another hour of the cesspool is in the can. Don't go away. There's more to come right here on
it matters
Liberty News Radio Network.
The people here. It matters most people know what he's saying.